Hey, Follow community, welcome to the Follow podcast. Hopefully you've weathered the storm of Easter and you were able to see how your contribution added to people hearing the good news of Christ's resurrection. You know, it's really the whole reason we're doing this in the first place, but it's so easy to lose sight of. So hopefully in the days since, you've been able to recover and remember why you did all that work. You know, Jesus says in John 10:10, "The thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy, and I have come that they might have life and have it to the full." And that full life is what Jesus intends for you and me. And so often, we let the craziness of something like preparing for Easter steal, kill, and destroy our lives. I mean, was it a busy time? Yeah, without question. But Jesus isn't inviting us to a life of destruction, but one of life to the full. And on many levels, it's really up to each of us to determine what that means for ourselves. But we can't just keep working harder and harder and hope that the abundant life kind of catches up with us. So now that we're post-Easter, take some time to recenter yourself, rest, put the task of preparing for services to the side, even if it's just for an afternoon, and do something that fills you up. If you're new to our podcast, our goal here is to help you become more effective so that your church can become more effective. And we do that not only through the podcast, but our book, I Love Jesus, But I Hate Christmas, the Philo Conference, which is coming up in 3 weeks, oh my goodness, and Philo Cohorts. So stick around after the interview and you'll hear some special information about both those topics. All right, on to our podcast today. I'm joined by Alex Seeley, the lead pastor at Belong & Co. Church in Nashville, and she's a main session speaker at this year's Philo Conference. We had a wonderful conversation, and I'm really excited for you to have a chance to listen to it, so let's get to it. Alex Seeley, welcome to the podcast.
So good to be here.
Thanks for joining us. So you're much more than a main session speaker at Philo, so why don't you maybe tell us a little bit about what you do, and then I would love just the story of how you ended up kind of in this place.
Yeah. My husband and I have been married 26 years, and as you can tell by my accent, I'm actually originally from Australia, and so my husband and I were part of a church since we were teenagers, mm-hmm. and kind of local church people all the way, went to one church my whole life and got involved in the youth ministry and then went to Bible college, got on staff after Bible college and helped kind of pioneer a movement in Australia called Planet Shakers with our pastors, which is really intrinsic in that I was pastoral care and Henry was worship leader and producer and writer and all things, you know, creative.
Yeah.
And so we did that for many, many years, I think just under 20 years.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I've been in vocational ministry. This year will be 30 years, which just seems so wild. Yeah. Yeah, I started young, started at 21, and, yeah, just have served the local church and our pastors for that season. But it got to about, you know, 2009, and we just felt this shift in our spirit, and we'd never really understood what that meant because we thought we were forever going to be in the same church doing what we're doing. We loved it.
Yeah.
Melbourne's a great city to do it in. And, you know, we just followed God's leading, but He would not leave us alone. And for about 2 years, just through different situations, different circumstances, different prophetic words and, you know, just the leading of the Holy Spirit, He just led us to the United States of America, which is so unusual because it's not something that we'd ever dreamed about or said we would live there one day. It just really was this place where Henry would do a lot of album production over in the States. And so he would mix records, the records that we were recording in Australia, he would do the mastering and the mixing in America. And this one particular day, he said, "I don't know why, but this just feels like home. And I feel like we have to pray into it." And I was like, "Well, you can stop praying because I'm not leaving."
No way.
We had two children. And I was like, "I'm not moving the other side of the world for nothing. You know, like, what are we going to go to?" But there was a sermon once in 2009 in our church that this visiting speaker came and he was talking on Abraham. And, you know, obviously the obvious topic is about leaving everything that he's ever known and going to nothing by just simple obedience. And I remember just the Lord impressing upon my heart, "Would you go to nothing with nothing if I asked you to?" And I remember saying, I don't think I'm ready for that. I don't think I'm ready to just step out in faith to nothing. Like, it has to be something. And it took 2 years for God to really work on us. And then through a series of events, we talked to our senior leadership and they said, get a green card. And we're like, well, how do you do that? And, you know, we start Googling how to get a green card. And because they said that can be your, you know, confirmation that the Lord is saying yes to this movement in your heart. Mm-hmm. So we applied in the green card diversity lottery, visa lottery that apparently 14 million people apply for every year.
Yeah.
And the Australian contingent is like 700 to 900 people that get it out of the 50,000 that are chosen.
Right,
so the odds are very small.
Yes.
But we put it before the Lord and we said, if this is you, and that was like October of 2010.
Okay, all right.
And May 2011 is when you kind of find out your results.
Right.
The funny thing was we did not get accepted for the green card lottery. So I was like, okay, God, I really thought this was you, but we're just going to, again, submit everything to you. Well, my husband was on tour at the time in Germany, and he gets this email from the US State Department saying that there had been an error in the draw of the green card lottery.
Okay.
And he's like, do you think this is a scam? And I said, well, let me research it, you know. So I researched it, and apparently there'd been a glitch in the computer system, and so they hadn't a fair result out of the green card lottery. So they said, we're going to pop all your names back in the draw and July 15, we'll do a new draw.
Okay.
Well, that's when I just went into prayer and I went, okay, is this a test of faith? Because I do believe you've called us to America now. We're so sold on that idea in our heart. But God, you have to do this now. This is all on you. July 15 rolls around and we do get accepted for the green card lottery. And so our pastors were like, well, this is the Lord. Follow follow the prompting. And so we literally, in April of 2012, we packed up our life. We sold everything. We took our four-year-old and our eight-year-old and we moved to Nashville, Tennessee with nothing in mind but obedience. And we flew over here. We got here. And I didn't like Nashville, Tennessee. Sorry for all Nashville listeners. I love it now. But at the time, I didn't, you know, because it was such a culture shock.
So different. Yeah.
Oh, like on every level. And even though we speak the same language as Americans and Australians, we have a completely different culture, mindset, everything. It's different. And so I wasn't prepared for that. Mm. And so I didn't really like Nashville. And so I was kind of on the edge of my seat every day going, we're not going to live here, right? We're just going to land here for a minute and we're going to go to New York or we're going to go to LA or something where it feels more familiar to me, like home. Anyway, didn't happen. Henry was like, you know what? Let's just settle here for a minute and let's just see what God does. Well, in that season from April to July, I was floundering and just didn't know what to do. Henry was a mix engineer, among other things. So he's all things production. So for all you listeners out there, he's always the first in, last out. He knows everything techie. I am the complete opposite. And so he is involved in all album production, music production, writer, producer, engineer, all the things. And so he was fine in America. He got work straight away. We had been here 2 weeks. He's already on a project.
Right.
But I was floundering because I'd been in ministry for 17 years in Australia, but in the South, women aren't recognized on the pulpits.
Right.
So I was like, love, not only do I not like this area that we're living in, but this isn't an area for a woman to be preaching and teaching. Like, they don't receive us here. So what are we doing here? And he just said, you know what? I feel like God's saying we're supposed to be here. So it was about July, and I was wrestling with the Lord, and I was reading the scriptures at the time chronologically as it happens in history.
Sure.
You know, the chronological Bible version.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't make sense. You know, Job is the oldest book in the Bible. And then you're like working through, it's all kind of haphazard everywhere. But I was on day 100 and I don't know, I have to get this day right, but it was like 150 something.
Okay.
And it was 2 Kings 2:19. And it just, as I read this scripture, I remember crying out to the Lord saying, why are we here? Like, there has to be a purpose for both of us. And as I read 2 Kings 2:19, it said, where the prophets come to Elisha and they say, Elisha, Elisha, the location is good, but the waters are sick and the land is unfruitful. And he says, bring me a bowl of salt. And as he put salt in the waters were healed and they remained fruitful until this day. Well, it was like the Lord himself spoke audibly. And I've never heard God speak audibly to me, but you know when you get that impression that, wow, this is God. And I just began to weep. Mm. And I felt like God put a mandate in our heart and said, Tennessee, Nashville right now, is it's the location where I've always wanted my spirit to fall. Mm. But the location's good, but the waters are sick, the spiritual waters. Mm. And I'm going to use you and Henry to be catalysts of change within the spiritual climate of this city. And we're not the only ones, but this was part of our mandate to do this. And that's when we started to get a hold of the vision. And so my eyes began to be open to see the need around me. Mm. What we began to notice is Nashville is such a transient town, full of musicians, full of crew, artists, production people, touring people. You have the crew, you have the artist, you have the writer, you have the whole gamut of creativity based in this city. And most people are getting on a tour bus on Wednesday night and not coming home till Monday.
Yeah.
And no one's in church. Mm. And so we were like, wow, like who's shepherding these production guys? Who's shepherding these artists? Who's shepherding these people that are actually pouring out for the glory of God but aren't being poured into?
Right, right.
And so we got this idea, which I believe was a God idea now, that we would open up our home on a Tuesday night because most touring people's Sabbath is Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah.
And we were like, why don't we just open up our home and do a Bible study? And I can't tell you how brilliant that was, because even though we only had five people the first night, it never stopped growing from that first night. And we watched people get radically impacted by God and really drink from a well of living water that refreshed them and renewed them. It wasn't church as usual. Right. And I think so many people were used to the mega church or the big corporate church and needed something of just the pure presence of God to almost recalibrate them as to the why of what they do and who they are without all the other stuff that was maybe a distraction. Right. And so I don't know whether it was just God's brilliance or whether it was just, I do believe it was God's providence and his sovereignty, but it was just the beginning of something that we didn't even know we were going to be a part of. And so now, 10 years later, you know, we have a church of several, I don't even know how many thousand, but it's lots, and three locations, and we have music that goes across the globe, and it's actually just pretty amazing to see what God's done, even though we never really set out to do this.
Yeah, I was struck this morning. I was poking around the Belong & Co. website, and just to think about what's happened in 10 years, it feels like only something God would orchestrate.
Yeah.
The Tuesday night group, do you think that because you and your husband came from kind of that world, that that was part of what really worked, like that people felt connected because you understood kind of what they were dealing with?
Yeah, I really think that was God's sovereignty in bringing someone like Henry, who is really been involved in every facet of creative church life. So he can relate. That's why he's not your average senior pastor, because most senior pastors don't understand production. They don't understand sound. They don't understand lighting. You know, they hire people to do this.
Right, right.
But then you've got Henry that has only ever grown up in understanding sound and stage and lights and the before and afters, like, you know, how to get in before and how to set up a great mix and what rig to buy and what console to use. And so there was such a safety for so many. So not only did we get the worship leader, the artist, the singer, the writer, we were getting the load in and load out crew, the mix engineers, the production guys coming to this basement, getting rent. And there was a relatability from Henry, especially because it was like, oh my gosh, you get me, you understand me. But what we didn't do is almost coddle there, because sometimes we can have a bit of a brokenness in that area where we, you know, oh, I'm doing all the work, a bit of a martyr complex.
For sure.
And so we, you know, Henry's like, no, this is a privilege. We get to do this. We are the priests that come in before anybody else and set the tone of the atmosphere of what's going to happen on a Sunday or a Tuesday, you know?
Yeah.
And so I do think there was this beautiful connection of somebody who was like him, but who has a spiritual depth and understanding to lead them.
Yeah, yeah. Just even that it's on a Tuesday night, you know, knowing that this is the time that works for people and they're going to be heading out tomorrow. And I think too, even there's nothing flashy going on. Everything's stripped away. You can't critique the mix. We're just in your basement.
Yeah.
And it's the Bible and us.
Yep.
That's it. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And that was really interesting to even see the evolvement of the belonging from the basement to what we have now.
Yeah.
Henry's had to take people on a journey that the essence of what we do, whether it's in the basement or it's in municipal auditorium, it should have the same presence. And the whole point of why we have great production and great lighting and great sound is to remove the distraction so that people can encounter God. And I think what people had to do is reset to actually have all the distractions physically taken away from them.
Right, right.
And then rebuild them the right way. Because what I have seen over church life forever is that sometimes we get more fixed on and focused on the lights, the sound, the audio visual, and there's no presence of God. Yeah. And you can't have one without the other. So we have a manifesto that says, you know, presence over presentation. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't mean void the presentation. It just means make sure the presence of God is the primary focus, not the presentation.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
You know, we've got encounter over entertainment. It doesn't mean we can't have some form of entertainment, but if entertaining is all we're doing without the encounter of Jesus, we've just become a Broadway musical.
Right, right.
You know, people over position. We need people in position, but don't ever neglect the person over something that needs to be done.
Right,
so don't use people as commodities and minions, but people matter.
Yeah,
and, you know, Jesus over everything. Let's make sure that everything that we are doing points every single person to Jesus. And so we've lived by an intimacy over industry, because in Nashville, everything was about networking and the industry.
Right.
But let's never forget that our ultimate goal is to be intimate with the one that we are worshiping over the industry of music and church and blah. So that has become our mantra, our manifesto, so that we keep people focused on the why, so that they're able to do and not get jaded along the way.
Yeah. Those phrases was something that really stood out to me that I love. And it's so easy for all of us to look at Instagram, to see what people are doing, you know, visually or even on your best day. Oh, this is what belonging is doing. How can we do that? And so you automatically go to, well, let's get these lights and this PA and these musicians, and then it will be exactly like that. And I think we miss the whole point that what is God doing where you are, and get on board with that instead of trying to manufacture something that's, you're just seeing the outward reflection of something else.
That's right. There's always a behind the scenes to everything. It's like Instagram generally, you know, like my highlights are Instagram, because I've done an exercise on Instagram that whenever I've put something sad on there, I don't get responses.
Right.
I don't get because no one wants to hear bad news.
Right,
so
right.
Instagram really is about your highlights of life, but that's not reality.
Right, right.
The reality is there are days that are hard. And what we've really, because, you know, we've had so many people like, oh, well, no one, yeah, of course your church has grown. You know, you've got Natalie Grant and Kerry Job and Cody Carnes. Right. But what people don't actually understand is that Kerry and Cody were coming to the basement when they needed an encounter and every other church may have been using them for their gift, but we were just letting them sit in the presence of God and they never sang one song, but they got healed and whole. And, you know, people like Natalie Grant, who when she came into our midst, she will tell this story where she's standing in the presence of God and saying, I was a professional Christian for all of these years. I know how to be professional. She goes, but I was in this atmosphere and I was being moved by the presence of God and I remembered why I do this. Mm. So their hearts are being softened again to the presence of God, to what matters.
Yeah.
No one on our platform is there because of their gift. They're there because they've had a change of heart, like God's wrecked their lives. So what you're sensing in the worship is an overflow of encounter, not talent, because anyone can sing a great song,
but
not everyone carries the authority to break through an atmosphere.
Yeah. So going from your basement where there are no physical distractions, that it's everybody can just come and be and receive for the most part, you know, to a more formal setting with, you know, okay, now we have seats facing a platform and a PA. Yeah. Like, how was that transition for you and your husband, or just even for the whole, your whole community?
Yeah. And that's a process. That's a discipleship process. And the goal was never to end up where we are at 201 Great Circle Road. Like, that was never the goal. The goal was actually, God, if you just give us 100 people to steward for the rest of our lives, we will be happy with that in our basement. Yeah. But what was happening is, and this is the thing that I think some Christians get hung up on, they throw out the mega church because they've put everyone in the same category. But mega is just another word for big, large. Yeah. What was happening in the basement was so beautiful, but it would be very selfish of us to keep it in a basement.
For sure.
100 people is not the goal. The goal is go into all the nations, right? Discipling nations, make disciple of nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, teaching them everything that I've taught you to do, and lo, I will be with you always. The goal was preach the gospel, disciple nations. Mm-hmm. That can't be small. So you have to teach your people, while this has been beautiful, while this has been safe, while this has been a recalibration, if we were to just keep this as 100 people, that would be a very selfish act. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's stopping people from encountering God. The reality is, the bigger something gets, the more you do need seats. You do need a sound system. You do need, but what you have to realize is it's not about the things. And that's where you have to get the people on board of understanding, all right, and you know what? Some people did have a problem with it.
Some people
had a problem of transitioning from the basement. Now, from the basement, we just went to a coffee shop, which was 120 people. Uh-huh. So we didn't, every stage was because for 2 weeks we outgrew that coffee shop. And the coffee shop was the same thing, tiny, small. It was just a bit, had 20 extra seats.
Yeah.
Then from the coffee shop, Houston Station, we went to the Foundry, 300 seats. Now, this was still a very daggy, intimate place that had just a stage, a small PA, seats, but it went to 300 people. Well, that thing maxed out within a few weeks.
Wow.
So then we had to find 429. Now, 429 was basically, it's where Apple Music is in Nashville now, near Soho House. And when we had it, it was the dilapidated building that should have been condemned. It had one toilet that was working. It had no air conditioning. Yet it fit 350 people in this kind of hangar-style degenerate building. So again, it wasn't this, look how beautiful. It was, again, just a rolled-up screen, a projector on a stand, our iPhone plugged to a stand so that we could stream to our touring congregant members.
Yeah.
It was still basic, but the presence of God still showed up. But now into 350. Then we had to expand because we couldn't fit any more people. And that's when Rocket Town opened up to us. Now, Rocket Town was still daggy, but it was a stage. Yes, we did buy a better PA because, again, Henry's whole mindset is I don't want sound distracting people in a community that this is what they do for a living. Exactly what you said before, they're going to come in and they're going to start picking the mix apart because that's what their ears are trained to do. So he said, my goal is that everything's done so well so that nobody even notices the sound. They just engage with God. And so it's taking your people on the journey of saying, we're expanding because God's growing this. Now we've got to roll with it. And so what you're doing is you're, again, teaching the why behind the what so that people catch the vision, but they understand. And you can ask our worship pastor who's been with us this whole 10 years. He said, even on the video of our 10-year celebration, he said, nothing has changed, even though we've got bigger. The presence is still there. And Alex and Henry haven't changed. Like, so you have to see the fruit of 10 years of just because we have now lights and an audio visual system and a PA and a building, you should never, it should never, ever substitute for the presence of God. These things are just aids to help us not have distraction.
Yeah. One of the statements I read on your website was excellence is worship, which I so appreciate, but I also know that it can be easily distorted, that the excellence becomes the goal instead of the means to
worship.
Because
if you look at scripture, God was excellent in everything that he did. I mean, he says very good. I mean, that's basically as elaborate as he gets with himself. He says, that was good, and making humanity was very good.
Yeah.
So he's like, this is good. And he goes, but then when you look at the description, when he asked for the Ark of the Covenant to be built, he wanted his presence to reside in the middle of the camp of his people. But the detail that went into just that ark of the gold cherubim and then what needed to be input in it. And then when he made the temple, the detail of the temple, and then it said that the glory of the Lord fell on, the Shekinah glory fell once it had been completed. I do believe God, look at just creation, look at how excellent the earth is before humanity has botched it up. You know, look at how beautiful it is. Everything has a standard of order and excellence, whereas sin is chaos and disorder. So I believe God's a God of excellence because why? When there's excellence, there's beauty. And when there's beauty, we worship. And so it's not, but what I have seen, church globally, and it's why we needed to go back to a basement to recalibrate people, is because everyone had made the things that we see, the goal, and at the expense of people. We have pastors yelling at production people. We have pastors yelling at their creative teams because the transition wasn't seamless. That is rubbish. Because you know what? We all make mistakes. At the end of the day, the goal needs to be, did the presence of God fall in our meeting? And if there were mistakes, so be it. But the goal is the presence of God. The goal is not how flashy and amazing can we make everything.
Yeah. From a production standpoint, the presence of God being there in our midst is out of my control. You know, like as a person. And so what is in my control? This gift that God's given me. And so I'm going to work it as hard as I can.
Yeah.
But I think it's so easy, to get lost in the, this is the most important thing, that the transitions are perfect, because I don't know exactly how do I, I have no control over whether God shows up or doesn't.
Yeah. Well, prayer is going to guarantee God shows up. You know, prayer and expectation are going to, but then preparation is what you guys do best. So the preparation leads to the freedom of God to move whether he wants to or not. But it doesn't, it's not on us to have to fabricate it. And I think at the end of the day, if we've prepared, it's like with our worship team, we don't do rehearsals during the week. You know, we have our people prepared during the week in their own time so that when we come to rehearsal on the day, we have a set list, we have a plan. But we always say, be so prepared that if God wants to go left or right, that we are prepared in ourselves that we don't have to have the sheet music in front of us. We're so prepared because we've been diligent in doing our part that if God needs to move, we can flow with Him and be ready in and out of season. And I think with production and with that's the preparation. We talk to our production guys and we don't have an us and them mentality either. It's not production and worship. It's creative team that happen to do production and happen to do worship.
Yeah, I love it.
We're all part of one team. And so because the production guys, we see them as the priests that walk in. They're the first into the sanctuary, which means they set the tone of how rehearsal is going to go. So if they're angry, if they're agitated, if they're moody, guess what that's going to do? That's going to flow to the worship team. And so again, it's discipling them, it's including them, it's bringing them into relationship with their, as if not the most important part of our worship. And so preparing them and saying, hey, what you're doing is you're setting a table so that that person that walks in today that's never been to church or maybe is disgruntled with the church or jaded with the church, today is their day of encountering Jesus, and you are that person that sets the table for them. When you give your production and all your workers, you know, that work so hard setting up and doing all the hard lifting. When you give them the why, they come in with a different posture. They come in with a different expectation. And then when they see God move, you watch them at the end of the day. They're like, man, I was part of this. That was my fruit. And so when you include them in and honor them for what they do, there is a shift in relationship. And so there's got to be a synergy and a unity between the worship team, the production team, the lighting team, the broadcast team, the video team, the guest services who are welcoming. Everyone's playing their part. The kids workers, all of us are playing our part as the members of one body to actually bring a feast so that someone can eat at the table and encounter God.
Oh, I love it. One of the things I've noticed in the local church is that because we can't avoid production, you have to, you know, it doesn't, almost any size church, you know, if you're out of your basement, you need some kind of production support.
Totally.
That there's a sense that I get from not production people, but senior leaders that good production is sort of an entitlement, like the church deserves this, which I could, I could get on board with that, but it's at the expense of understanding the people or taking care of the people that make the production happen. Buying all the gear in the world is not going to make it better, but making the people behind the gear feel like they're a part of what's going on, and maybe more than feel, but know that they're a part of what's going on and that they need to be taken care of in the process.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. And this is what we saw back in Australia. I think it was revolutionary for us. We were one of those churches that really, and Henry has had a huge part to this. And this is why I think Henry's such a unique leader, because he was the guy setting up the sound system, but he was also the guy leading worship. So he had twofold jobs. And like, he is probably the only senior pastor, and I might be saying something maybe out of full understanding, but give me an umbrella of mercy. But he's one of the few pastors, I should say, that understands the full gamut from beginning to end and therefore, and in fact, has probably more knowledge than the people that he employs. He has more knowledge about, I mean, he taught himself how to mix on an SSL console without any formal training and won a Grammy for audio engineering. Like, the guy is a brilliant genius. So he knows a lot. He was the one ordering the PAs for our church when we birthed it in Australia. He understands. And so because he understands, our production guys have a huge amount of respect for Henry. And that goes both ways. Henry has a huge amount of respect for our production guys. And so if you see our production leader right now, his name's Andy Rushing, who was originally a lighting technician for incredible bands across America, left everything, came to work for us. But when you hear Andy say, Pastor Henry has drawn more out of me than I even knew was capable. Mm. You start to cry because you go, these are normally the guys that are yelled at. And like you said, there's an entitlement that you better have your stuff together. And if there's a mistake, it's on you and you make me look bad, rather than, guys, I appreciate everything that you do. And and we're going to shift the game of this whole narrative that production people are the grumpy guys that, you know, just sit in a corner. But they're spiritual as well.
Yeah.
Because they're bringing their gift to give to the church, and we need to honor that. And so we're really passionate about that.
Yeah, I might start volunteering at your church. So wonderful. It's a little bit of a commute for me from Chicago, but
yes,
one of the things that I believe very strongly, it was true in my own life, that if I was unhappy with my situation, you know, if it was hard and relationships were tough and, you know, I didn't feel trusted at my church, at a certain point I realized, okay, what can I do?
Yeah.
I'm responsible for part of this. So what? How can I make this better as it depends on me?
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that we talk about a lot at Philo, just that as an individual person, as a technical artist in the local church, you have responsibility to show up prepared, to not hold anything against somebody, but to have those hard conversations. There's a whole list of things that I could do.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, though, I don't have any control over my worship leader, my senior pastor, and how that environment could change. Maybe there's no answer to this question, but what would you say to somebody who feels like they're in that situation of, I'm doing what I feel like God's calling me to do, and my situation, I don't feel any more buy-in from my senior leaders into my life, and what could I do to change the culture at my church?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think that happens a lot, and I think obviously every case is unique, and you really do have to seek the Lord on this, and what I'm about to say is not going to apply to everybody, but I do believe that first and foremost, there's always a season that God allows you to go through that you really are doing this unto the Lord and Him alone. And in that means you will be overlooked, you will be underappreciated, you will be sometimes treated badly. I do not condone being treated badly, but we have, myself and my husband, been treated badly in our younger years. And God never permitted us to leave when it was bad, because what He was actually doing in us is killing all the flesh in us that this was about me.
Yeah,
I needed to be appreciated. I needed to be given thanks. I needed to be valued and validated. And there's a twofold in this, and it's where some people don't really understand that God sometimes allows you to feel like He felt as He walked the earth, because it does grow you, because it does do something in you. But then there comes a time where if it is any kind of abusive behavior, and what I mean by abusive behavior is absolutely unwarranted bad behavior that's consistent every single day for years, you have to leave, because I don't believe you're supposed to be in a place where you're abused and treated badly. I believe there's a season that God's going to use it, and He's going to grow you and get some grit inside of you. You are doing this to the Lord. So just always remember that God sees everything you do, and He always honors you. He will always vindicate you. He will always bless you. You will reap what you sow. So be careful with what you say. Be careful the attitude that you carry. But then there is a certain time where God might actually say, hey, it's time to hang up your hat, because go where you're growing and you're flourishing, because there are some toxic places. And I don't believe in living in a toxic environment, because it's actually not Christ-like and it's not Christian. And it actually breaks my heart. We've actually, me and Henry did a conference once with a whole bunch of tech and production people here in Nashville. And we had a line as long as you can imagine, with people just weeping because of the way they get yelled at, the way they get spoken down to. And that's not okay. Yeah. It's not okay. Now, if you've been overlooked, underappreciated, overused a little bit, you know what? Get over it. We all do. That's why you work in the local church. Yeah. But if you're being yelled at, if you're being demeaned, if you're being marginalized, if you're being made to feel shame, if you, that is unacceptable in my book. I will not tolerate bad behavior in our midst. I will not tolerate bullying. I will not tolerate somebody feeling, especially as a volunteer. You know, that is the highest honor for me, to have somebody give up their time to serve the local church. And under no circumstances should there be abuse. So it's one of those tensions that there is going to be a season where you are going to feel all these things, but make sure you understand what that is.
Yeah.
And then ask the Lord what he wants you to do with that.
Yeah, yeah. I know for me, there were so many seasons of my life that I felt like, well, this is just what it's like. It's just hard. And, you know, Jesus said he, you know, came to offer me an abundant life, and this doesn't feel super abundant, so maybe that was for other people, but, you know, this is just how it's going to be. Yeah. And I think, to your point, there are things that we can grow and get better at and become more of who God has in mind for us. But I think at a certain point, I feel like the body of Christ, like God had in mind that we were all working at our best together. Yes. And if you're in a place where you're not working in your best, that you're being kind of beat down all the time, you know, over time, I don't think God had that in mind.
No, it's not God. And that's what breaks my heart, is that people then view God like that, and God is not like that.
Yeah.
Like, he is not the one that hits you over the head when you've made an innocent mistake. He's the one that shows grace and mercy and love. Yes, he convicts. Yes, he challenges. Yes, he corrects. Mm-hmm. I've got no problem with that, but it's done in love.
Yeah.
And also, this is a big deal. If you are leading teams, for those listening, you know, you can't expect output when you have not input. And I am a big believer that you can't draw from an ATM that has no deposits in it, because it will just be in the negative. And what I see a lot of the times is leaders will draw from people, demand without ever putting in. And so, you know, we have discipleship once a month. We make sure that our guys are taking their guys out for lunch and dinner. There's a input, there's relational equity, there's spiritual equity, there's a filling up so that their tanks are full when they come to church, not always drawing from an empty tank. And I think we have to be very mindful that when you have a team, you have to nurture that team and not just pull from that team, because that's where people feel used and abused, is when they're only getting output but never getting input.
Yeah, when a person feels like a means to an end versus they are the end. It's about relationship and—
Totally.
Yeah. This conversation has been so great, and I appreciate you taking time to be with our community, and can't wait for the Philo conference and to hear kind of the word that God has put on your heart for our people. We haven't really known each other. We've talked one other time, but I love how God works, that for your name to kind of come up and us become aware, and then to have this conversation and have your heart beat so for the production person. I don't know that I could have planned that.
Yeah, and that's God, because he cares about, and I love what you guys are doing. It's why I said yes to speaking at this conference, because I believe in it so much, because if we can just have the body working seamlessly as one unified, understanding that every part is so important, I think we will have a beautiful church. And I'm so tired of the enemy winning with offense and neglect and just that awful, I just don't want toxic environments. Henry and I fight for health, and we fight for unity, and we fight that we will have a beautiful environment, because there's nothing worse than peeling behind the curtain of a great conference where everything looks great on the stage and backstage everyone's, you know, talking, backbiting each other, and, you know, power playing and hierarchies are happening. And I'm just like, oh. And Henry always says, you know, you don't win a war single file. with the commander in chief at the front and then everybody behind. You win a war by a row where you're linked arms together and you're advancing at the same place. You know, often the commander of the army was right on the front lines with the soldiers. And they went in together as a united force. And I think if we can do this as the church with our production worship, pastors, leaders. In fact, this year at our conference, we're actually going to be doing a leadership panel between the senior pastor and the production people. And because
I love it,
we get so many requests of like you asked before, but what happens when your pastor or your leader doesn't get this? And guess what? We get a lot of pastors that register for this. And this year we're talking to pastors about this because I believe it starts at the top because you've got good people who want to see change, but you can't change the top. The top has to change down. And that's why you have to have healthy leaders who respect. And Henry always says this, you know, he will talk to pastors all over the world and they'll always come into our house going, oh man, your mix is amazing. What system are you using? And he goes, honestly, guys, it's not the system. It's the person behind the system.
Yeah.
You can have the most expensive system, but if you've got a rookie or somebody who is jaded and angry, they're not putting you up in the mix. They're doing this in spite.
Yeah, right.
you can have the most wham-banger thing in the world, but if you don't have the right heart and the right person managing that thing, you can pay millions of dollars and still have a crap mix. So it's just all about... There's so many facets to having excellence. And so I believe in relationship being the first key.
Yeah. So many pastors don't understand what's going on back there.
Yes.
Because it's unfamiliar to them, they feel like they can't really speak into it or speak into the life of the person that's back there.
Uh-huh.
And so a lot of pastors, I feel like, are just abdicating their leadership responsibilities to cast vision and to confront maybe some of the bad behavior to build a relationship with that person because it's so different. And I love that you and your husband coming from that world just feels like, oh, like I said, I want to be on your volunteer team.
Like it's fun. Like, you know, yesterday we're in staff meeting and we're discipling our whole staff. And yet I'm talking about identity. You know, I'm talking about unless we find our identity in Christ, we're always going to look for affirmation and we're going to strive for all of these validation points apart from Jesus. And, you know, I put an appeal up and most of my production guys, soft hearts, are responding. Mm. And then we're praying for them. You see, that's the input. And so I know that the overflow of that is hearts that then when they're speaking to their guys and girls, that they're building that into their team. And so it's a whole flow down effect. But imagine how many churches leave their production guys out of those discipleship meetings they're like, oh, they're just production guys. No, they're spiritual men and women of God that need the input so that they can do their job with a whole heart, not a fractured heart. So I could talk about this for hours.
No, so good. Me too. Thanks again for being a part of our podcast today.
Yeah, you're so welcome. It was great chatting with you.
1, 2, 3, 4 So good. And I can't wait to hear more from Alex at the Philo Conference. If you haven't decided on whether or not you're going to come to Philo, there's still time to get tickets. You can use the code PODCAST10, that's the word podcast, all lowercase, and the number 10, to get 10% off any ticket, whether it's in person, a group in person, or a streaming ticket. And you can go to philo.org/event to sign up. Also, we have our second installment of the Philo Summer Skills Cohort coming up, oddly enough, this summer. You can also go to our website, philo.org/coaching, and you can get all the details of how to sign up for these. These were great last summer, and I'm really excited about what's in store for us in 2024. So go sign up. All right, thanks for listening. You can follow us at Philo Community on Facebook and Instagram to stay up to date on everything Philo. And until next time, see you later.